Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program that's devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who know that the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us, is toll-free, 877-376-45. I feel like I need to apologize for yesterday. I think there was some positive ground covered, but for the to a significant degree, our guest over the course of both hours yesterday was misguided. You know, this notion that epilepsy is the cause of the Quran is counterproductive. That it might explain why he had tremors or why he hallucinated, but it does not explain the words. It does not explain the terrorist acts. It doesn't explain anything that is the basis of Islam. It doesn't explain the plagiarism. It doesn't explain the ongoing argument in Mecca. It doesn't explain the satanic verses. It doesn't explain the wild's ass ride on the winged Barak to the non-existent temple. It doesn't explain the declaration of war on all mankind as the Pledge of Aqaba. It does not explain his hatred for Jews and how he had to buy Talmud readings to make his Quran seem credible. And then when the Jews asked him for payment, he turned on them. Doesn't explain the 75 terrorist raids, the rapes, the pedophilia, the kidnapping. And so to say that all there is to Islam is epilepsy is ridiculous. It's counterproductive. It's untrue.
Especially since everybody probably knows somebody that's had seizures.
Right.
And they're not out doing all this stuff.
You know, I think we all know someone who has epilepsy. And epilepsy did not and has not caused them to create a deadly, destructive, deceitful, and damning religion. The second thing was that the Quran wasn't actually revealed by Muhammad and instead was two guys, a Catholic priest and a Jewish rabbi in some place fabricating it. Good God! The stupidity of that statement. And to try to hawk a book where you've made that statement. And all you've got to do is to read the material in chronological order in the context of Muhammad's life, and you know exactly who wrote it, and you come, and there's no other possible conclusion. There isn't a chance in a billion that a rabbi wrote a book about Alexander the Great going to a muddy spring where the sun goes to bed at night to try to terrorize extraterrestrials living there. There is no rabbi that's going to corrupt the story of Moses, Moshe, to the degree that it is in the Quran. And there isn't anything that is even remotely accurate regarding Christianity. What a farce. I mean, come on. We ought not be publishing such drivel. And I should not be hosting someone who's going to promote such things. It's ridiculous. I was just extraordinarily disappointed. And then this tie-in between Timothy McVeigh and Saddam Hussein, because somebody who was somebody formerly in the U.S. government says it so. When did government leaders, current or past, develop a reputation for telling the truth? Why would you believe any one of these idiots on anything? And why not just look at the record? Every time Saddam Hussein was confronted with a fundamentalist Islamic terrorist group or an Islamic terrorist, what did he do? He isolated them. He imprisoned them. The reason that Al-Qaeda wanted to invade Iraq was because Al-Qaeda despised Saddam Hussein. It just, you know, it's somebody just pulling little threads out of unrelated fabric and trying to weave them together into a cloth, and oh my. It was sad. Oh, this is a nice guy. He's really a pleasure to talk to, and you know, he has some insights that I think are valid in terms of the Saudi Arabians likely have nuclear bombs. We've known that though for a long time. But the whole experience, and this is a show devoted to exposing deceptions by revealing the truth. And yesterday, I'm sad to say, we heard a lot of things that were just untrue and not the least bit credible.
But I think it goes to it shows another thing, that they're just because you're Jewish and you're in Israel, it doesn't mean that you actually know the truth. It doesn't.
Of course not. He's religious. I mean, he thinks that Christianity and Judaism are compatible religions, and he is in favor of them.
And as far as you know, a rabbi not taking the words and perverting it into what Islam is, I've seen some verses out of the Talmud that are pretty close to what they say, they're pretty perverse as well.
The line that he was quoting, and he was right, that Quran 5:32, the line that Barack Obama, but mostly George Bush. I mean, that was George Bush's favorite line to quote to prove that Islam was a loving religion. If you kill one person, it's like you kill all mankind. And he was right in applying it to Jews. What he didn't know is that the line comes directly out of the Talmud. It's the Talmud story of Adam and Shawa pertaining to Cain and Abel. That story is where that was derived. And the preceding statements show that it was plagiarized out of that section of the Talmud. But he didn't know that. And, you know, I've got the part that I guess bothers me the most, and I've really tried hard to avoid this. It's why, you know, we don't have a lot of guests on the show. The tendency in society is to make yourself appear credible by getting people to say, you know, somewhat similar things, or you know, you find areas of agreement, or that you find and form alliances. And I've refused to do that. But I've had, you know, back in the days that I was actually paying attention to Prophet of Doom and the website, I must have had 1,000 people and institutions say they wanted to partner with me. And every single time I said no. Typically they were Christians. But if they weren't Christians, they were agnostics. They were atheists. They were one thing or another, but they all had their own agenda. And just because somebody knows that Islam is a criminal enterprise, which, you know, that's very few people. So you tend to be drawn to people who recognize that Allah was modeled after Satan and that Islam is a criminal enterprise. And Avi Lipkin knows those two things. So based upon those two things, I'm immediately interested in how he developed that understanding and to listen, to have everyone be able to listen to another voice that came to that conclusion. But unfortunately, and my concerns were met, they're valid, that if your perspective is religious, if your perspective is political, and he is equal to both, he was very active in the Likud party, and then switched to what he calls the Bible party, trying to unite Christians and religious Jews, he studied at Hebrew University, and he studied theology. So these are problems that warp a person's perspective. And so it just shows how you can have somebody that has come to many correct conclusions still not be an effective ally because their perspective is so erroneous that they're likely to say things which have no credibility whatsoever.
Yeah. But then you got guys like IQ who are You know, he's...
Yeah.
From when we first started with IQ until now, he has come... When he first started, he was very much into the Bible. And he's slowly...
Well, only as an agnostic.
Yep.
Probably as an atheist, really. Maybe between an atheist and an agnostic, for the purpose of just trying to communicate to the larger audience that listens to him in English, which are Christians, that the God of the Quran is not the same as, and then he would say, the God of the Bible. But you're right. He has grown tremendously in understanding, but there's a difference with IQ versus Avi Lipkin.
Well,
IQ came to it as an agnostic. And you were an agnostic when we met.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. I mean, yeah. You could say I probably still am. I mean, I know there's a God, but I'm not religious at all.
Right. Well, from you're anti-religious, as am I, and there's a lot of agnostics. And we ought not... Well, I guess we can. You could equate agnosticism with being anti, or at least a-religious, where you're not... You don't take a stand on religion, or you're opposed to religion, and most agnostics are. So you're not trying to change a person's perspective. You're not trying to work through what is the most difficult thing with most people, to get them to see the lies in their religion. With an agnostic like IQ, you present the truth. He's immediately receptive to it. It's not that, you know, he has to let go of some deception for him to be able to see the truth. That's why he's made such great progress.
And again, it's really, as somebody that's been here since day one with you, mm-hmm. and we've had IQ pretty much that entire time, he's come a very far away from where he was when he started.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, you know, just thinking of this rabbi and the priest writing the Quran. Think of the, and this is what I think the problem is, you know, Avi has not read the Quran and Hadith. If he has, he certainly hasn't studied them. But he said he doesn't even know them. But when you consider the breadth of material that described the circumstances that the Quran was given by Muhammad, it's impossible to make all that just go away. Because we're talking about conspiracies and saying that the Quran is a result of epilepsy. And that a priest and a rabbi got together to write the Quran. Those are conspiracies. And one of the problems I have with conspiracies, beyond the fact that they're very seldom true, is they take us away from a open, honest, thorough, and thoughtful review of that which can be known. They take us away from making logical connections and from a discerning attitude and exercising good judgment regarding the evidence. And they have this tendency to be myopic and focus on one thing out of context of the whole and ignore how the whole tells the story. And this is a case in point in that regard. We have Glenn on the line, and I don't know if Glenn was listening yesterday or just wants to comment on how people find a thread and run with it, regardless of the fact that you have to disregard all of the other evidence. Hello, Glenn.
Well, hello, Brianna. Buddha had irritable bowel syndrome, and Krishna had allergies. You know,
is that why he had the magical and big belly that you can rub and get miracles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Irritable bowel syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I understand. It makes a perfect sense. Then I understand. Okay. What was Adam Weishaupt, Karl Marx, and Lenin's excuse and Stalin?
They were just sociopaths.
Okay. All right. We're gonna blame Adolf Hitler on syphilis. You know, he was a syphilitic. You know, yeah. As were so many of these others. So Let's just blame all of World War II. Say, you know, there's nothing more to World War II than Hitler had syphilis.
Wow. Man, kind of makes the case for barrier contraception. but anyway, well, you know, this just goes to show you, like, we sure.
Oh, well, we lost Glenn. I thought he was going to tell the joke that a priest and a rabbi walk into a bar, and out comes the Quran. We'll get him back. There's more sad news out of the world of Islam today. At least 76 people, by the time they're done counting bodies, it'll be over 100, were killed, murdered, really. And 212 were mutilated Thursday in a blast that was perpetrated and claimed by the Islamic State. This was in Baghdad's Sadr city. Now, that's a really, 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 really interesting event. And the reason that it's interesting is, well, first of all, it affirms that the Islamic State and is a Sunni fundamentalist Islamic group, and that Baghdad, in particular Sadr city, but all of Baghdad, is primarily Shia Islam. And so that this battle is not for Syria. This battle is not for Iraq. The battle that is being fought is not against Israel. It's not against the West. The battle being waged by the Islamic State is against Shia Islam. There was absolutely no strategic benefit whatsoever of attacking Sadr city. The Islamic State is not going to invade Baghdad. It's not going to occupy Baghdad. But their goal isn't to invade Baghdad. It's not to occupy Baghdad. Their goal isn't to invade Iran. It's not to occupy Iran. Their goal is to kill Shia Muslims. And where is it easier to kill Shia Muslims than in a place that is populated by lots of Shia Muslims? Also, keep in mind that while the Islamic State has been extraordinarily successful against Shia militias and against the Iranian military, as the Iraqi military, which is all Shias, using American weapons, tried to defend for about 30 seconds and turned tail and ran and left all of the military hardware throughout the Anbar province and throughout Mosul and throughout really all of Western Iraq, that the principal tool of Islam, since Muhammad created the religion as a criminal enterprise 1,400 years ago, is terror. That Muslims are best when they are armed, when they're sending sacrificial jihadists in to murder unarmed and otherwise innocent civilians. That's what happened today. But think of the depravity that you tell a young boy or a young girl to get in a car, a truck in this case, that you've filled with explosives. And then you drive that car or truck into the most populated civilian area, into a marketplace, where most of the people there are women and children. And then you tell them that if you blow yourself up there, that you're going to go directly to Allah, where there's going to be 72 virgins waiting for you and rivers that flow with wine, and that your God is going to reward you for killing yourself and taking out 76 lives, mutilating 212 people, that your God just loves carnage, loves terrorism, loves death, that your God is opposed to people choosing not to surrender to him, so much so that if you don't surrender to him in exactly the way that your imam tells you, that you need to kill him, mutilate him. And they do. They're that stupid that they believe them, that they do. But here in Sadr city, to wound, murder, and mutilate 300 people. What that does is it tells us just how much hate there is between Sunni and Shia Islam. And I want to correct something that was said yesterday. There is no chance, none whatsoever, that this battle between Sunni and Shia is going to end in the next year, which is what our guest yesterday said. It isn't going to end in the next 3 years. It isn't going to end in the next 5 years. Yes, Glenn, welcome back.
Yeah, hi, sorry about that. You know, and I prefer to believe that I'm way too insignificant to merit the attentions of button-pushing cubicle dwellers at alphabet soup agencies, but sometimes I got to wonder.
Yeah, I got to wonder. Yeah.
There are so few
people who are not only willing to stand up against the establishment, against these reprehensible organizations like the NSA and the CSA and FBI and all of these, the Department of Justice, the DOJ, there's so few people willing to stand up and expose them or stand up and expose politics and religion and do so from a credible position that it's entirely possible, Glenn.
Yeah, it only seems to happen when I'm talking about
yes.
this.
Yes, yes.
But anyway, oh, by the way, I have a correction. Still checking. Turns out Shiva had an atrial septal heart defect, and that's why he was blue.
Okay, well, that makes perfect sense again. I'm just looking for an explanation as to how these religions came to be, and now I can say that that there's nothing more to Islam than epilepsy.
Right. Yeah, and there's a lot of things there about Islam, about the 72 virgins. Right,
yes.
There. Anybody who thinks you can handle more than one woman is an idiot to begin with.
Yeah, can you imagine that for the rest of eternity that you're going to be running through 72 virgins, and each time that you have very painful, very unpleasant sex with each of these 72 virgins, that they're going to grow according to the Quran, a new hymen, and you're going to hurt them all over again.
And that's
going to be fun. Them screaming out in pain, conquering them is going to be the eternal reward for murder. I mean, it is so utterly reprehensible, this basis of Islam. It is just disgusting, Glenn, that more people don't expose and condemn it, that the world is so politically correct that they aid and abet this disgusting religion.
Well, and it's with anything. It's when you confront people with a contradiction in the books they revere, they just become dismissive and avoidant. They don't really want to confront.
Very few people are
willing to confront contradiction like that.
They condemn the messenger who brings the information, even if that messenger is God himself,
right?
As opposed to dealing with it.
This epilepsy thing is preposterous. I'm a nurse, and I work. I have patients who have seizures. A lot of experience with all the various treatments associated with this, and you can understand how now we know that there are spiritual realities, and certain this phenomenon of demonic and unclean spirit oppression and stuff does exist, and does involve neurological manifestations. We see Yasha casting these unclean spirits out. So you can't really believe the Torah, Psalms, prophets, and the testimonies of, these eyewitness apostles without realizing that, yes, Jesus and, Shimon Kepesh and these big deal with these issues as spiritual matters. But that doesn't negate the possibility of, strictly physical causes for things like seizures and stuff,
Of course.
But you talk about Paul or Muhammad, admitting to demonic,
Look at Paul. His experience on the road to Damascus was so debilitating, so hellacious, that he required days upon days to recover and was struck blind. And you compare that to Muhammad's experience in Ramadan in the cave where the 96th surah was allegedly revealed, where he said exactly the same thing. He was beat to the point of almost death. So it is true that demonic spirits can cause a
neurological manifestation of something correct. Wrong. Yeah, dude,
right.
Exactly.
And they do. And we find, you know, like Yosha and his healing, he caused the blind to see. Now, if you're going to believe Paul, he caused the sighted to be blind. And he, you know, Yosha caused the lame to stand up and walk. If you're going to believe Paul, he took an ambulatory individual and caused him to fall down to the ground. I mean, you know, one heals and nourishes, the other beats to a pulp. That's ridiculous. But the biggest issue of the whole thing is that the secondary issue really is. You've been in contact with people with seizures and with epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
Is somebody with epilepsy more prone, less prone, or there is no correlation to the likelihood that they're going to start a criminal enterprise?
Yeah. I actually, most of my patients are patients like that have things like cerebral palsy or autism, things like that. So I'm dealing with younger clients. But I have known adults, you know, epilepsy mm-hmm. patients, and it doesn't seem to have any direct bearing on their character one way or another.
Right. Yeah, in fact, I would think that a person with epilepsy is typically going to be a little more cautious, a little more timid. They're going to be less likely to be a terrorist. They're going to be less likely to commit acts of armed robbery. They're going to be less likely to claim to be God's divine spokesperson, because you're going to say, well, if you're God's spokesperson, why are you such a mess? You know, I think they're less likely, not more likely. But the biggest issue, of course, it doesn't explain the text, doesn't explain the behavior, doesn't explain the religion.
Yeah, like the first time you're standing in front of a group of people trying to exhort them to violence and you fall down with a tonic-clonic seizure, that's going to, you know, impair your effectiveness, at least, if not your credibility.
Right.
So, you know, people say, do I really want to follow this guy? How often is this going to happen? You know.
Right.
Yeah. And I just take a moment to say that it behooves us, I think, in our present time, to be empathetic and understand people with epilepsy. If you look back at how long it took humans to get a grip on this, whether it's the Middle Ages or the times of Bedlam or modern hospitals and stuff, all the, you know, the various treatments, it's taken a long time for humans to understand, you know, seizure activity and to begin to understand the brain and come up with these various drugs and treatments that can help mitigate it somewhat. So, yeah, I'm always, you know, trying to approach this from, you know, in order to be understanding it, you know, assume that you're dealing with a neurological issue that is treatable and, you know, to be empathetic to the person.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah, and this notion that you can exonerate Muhammad and the fact that he was a pedophile, the fact that he was a rapist, the fact that he was a head of a crime syndicate and therefore a thief, the fact that he was engaged in the slave trade, the fact that he was extraordinarily perverted and deadly, that you can forgive all of that because, well, he had seizures.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. I'm surprised because, I don't know that much about, I'm assuming you've had Avi Lipkin, the guest you said. I've heard the name before, never run across anything that bizarre, you know, from him.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, I know the seizure thing with Muhammad is a popular, yeah, no, it's a popular conspiracy. And you know, the fact is, what all they're trying to do is to examine why he claimed that he shook when he received the Quran. And, you know, my guess is it was nothing more than a show, the same kind of show that Benny Hinn puts on where everybody shakes when he's allegedly healing them. And, of course, there's nothing going on. It's just part of the show.
Hey, I have felt the palm of Benny Hinn on my forehead.
Oh, good.
And I had to push back.
Yeah,
I was like, where are you pushing? Dude, why are you pushing me? So, yeah, I have actually had the honor of having my head pushed on by the dude.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, that's the deal. He wants to push you so that you fall down and make it look like that something's really happening. And, you know, as for that freak show, one of my good friends was very close to Benny Hinn and asked him, he says, you know, well, we all know that the vast majority of people here aren't changed at all. Do you actually know of a single person that was healed in any one of these events. And he says, no, not one.
Right.
Why do you do it? Brings the people in.
Yeah, the who's the German guy who's has the there's another some of these people have ministries like worldwide, draw thousands upon thousands in full stadiums mm-hmm. and stuff. But this the one guy, the German guy, doesn't come to the U.S. very often, but he's the same kind of thing.
Oh yeah, and Sun Young Moon in Korea, he was similar. Anyway, this whole situation with the Islamic State in Syria and in Iraq here, this being in Sadr City, which is in Baghdad, this is almost like the Islamic State is saying, first of all, let us be absolutely clear. We're not at war with the United States. We're not at war at this point with Israel. We're not at war with the Assad regime. We are at war with Shia Islam. The Islamic State exists primarily to obliterate Shia Islam. It came into existence because the United States had empowered Shia Muslims to terrorize Sunni Muslims. That's how the Islamic State began its existence. And it's true to those roots. They hate Shia Muslims. I think it's important to try to track, to discern, what is the likely path the Islamic State is going to take and what the consequences of the Islamic State? I think that's important because we're in the last 18 years, really. We've got 11 years and change, a little over 11 years before the beginning of the tribulation and 7 years thereafter. So we're in this last 18 years and we have so much of what's going to occur laid out for us, particularly in Yashaya, Isaiah 17 and 18, regarding Syria, Damascus, Iran, Iraq, and Israel, as well as the United States. So it's my contention, and you know, I'm just trying to understand these things, so that you can predict the how we end up where Yashaya and Yahweh tell us we're going to be, that the Islamic State will continue to score points with Sunni Muslims by killing Shia Muslims and inflicting wounds against Shia Muslims in places like Sadr City for the same reason that Roosevelt wanted to bomb Tokyo early in the Pacific theater of World War II to make them never feel comfortable anywhere, for them to protest against their government, for them to have to redeploy assets to protect their core, as opposed to being able to send their assets out. So I think it's strictly a stratagem. I do not see the Islamic State trying to capture and occupy Baghdad. I think they'll just draw attention to Baghdad to keep the Shia resources tied down there. But I think that the likely place that the Islamic State goes after they have Baghdad surrounded, after they have their Sunni regions of Iraq and Syria pretty well secured, is Jordan. And I think that's the easiest victory for them. And then after Jordan, perhaps Lebanon. And after Lebanon, then the question really becomes,
Israel.
Do they want to then attack Israel at that point, or do they want to get the weapon systems that are available in Saudi Arabia if they think that they can get the majority of Saudis to side with them and use those weapon systems? I think that's kind of the way it's going to play out.
That's fascinating. Of course, now, you know, Jordan, you know, as a bastion of, you know, Western influence,
with these spies, perfect target.
And that will be a real paradigm shifter in terms of the, you know, the sea change in terms of the Western influence. You know, if they can take Lebanon and Jordan, Lebanon's been torn back and forth, but Jordan's always been a bastion of Western influence. And so if they take those two, boy, that's going to change the complexion of the whole region.
In fact, some of the prophecies, Lebanon is the Jordan is the country that's trampled underfoot by the Muslims. Lebanon is actually, Jordan is actually destroyed, but by the attacking Muslims, it's trampled underfoot on their way to Israel. So it is, we know scripturally that Jordan is trampled underfoot because they are not respected by fundamentalist Muslims. And so I think that that is the most likely scenario from a strategic point of view, but it's also the one that is predicted, and I think that's the timeline that we're going to witness. Right. Did you hear that that Jeb Bush yesterday, I mean, this guy has got to be even dumber than his brother. Jeb Bush yesterday blamed the Islamic State and the mess of Iraq on Hillary Clinton.
He's saying like Biden. He's starting to say these really dumb things.
I mean, you just go and you say, you know, in Hillary Clinton's camp, Hillary didn't even respond, but his her campaign manager says, well, that's got to be the most bold attempt to redirect blame and to create a revisionist view of history that one could ever read. He went on so far as to say that the surge was successful, and that the Democrats like Hillary were taking credit for the surge and then retreated, and this problem is because they didn't know how to become peacemakers, that if you go to war, you need to learn how to be a peacemaker, and they didn't understand that concept. So that George Bush, having invaded and broken Iraq, was the peacemaker. And he wasn't absolutely clueless that the surge was the principal impetus for the Islamic State. The Islamic State does not exist today without the surge. The awakening program that was at the heart of the surge is the Islamic State. And it couldn't figure, and he can't figure that out, or can't even accept blame. We are so amoral as a nation. It was just astonishing to hear him say these things.